Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.
We've got Doc on the line now. Let's quickly go over to him. Dr. Mongo, can you? I hope we can hear you now, but I'm hearing some things, so I think we're positive. We're good.
I can hear you loud and clear. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, sir. We also can get you this time around. We truly appreciate your time, by the way, and thank you so much for being with us, not just today, but this entire week as we went through this very sensitive subject.
Most welcome. Thank you for having me.
Only a pleasure. Only a pleasure. Doc, we are in the finishing stages and we want to wrap it up perhaps looking back at that story of Job, but not from his lens now, from the lens of those who came through. You know, it's hard to know what's right, you know, to say. And it's so difficult because sometimes you end up saying the wrong thing. Maybe let's take a page from those that has tried to assist this man who had incomparable losses. What lessons can we learn from his friends, from his wife, and their perspective as he was going through the most? Can you maybe share some thoughts on how to do it or even how not to do it?
Well, my thoughts today, as I share, would be heavily influenced also by my own experience of loss and grief.
Yeah, yeah.
So, to a certain extent, I will not rely on one's training or the theories that we have around those.
Okay.
But if we observe from the friends, for instance, I think what they did when they first arrived, they're keeping quiet, they're knowing that they had nothing to say. The old man, I'm just assuming it was only if he had that old, if he had that many children.
True.
I want to think they were correct. What do you say to somebody who lost all their children just like that? And you lose all the material things that one had that brought comfortable living, you know. So they were correct in being there. Sometimes it's called the ministry of presence, just being there. And if they would have shed a tear or two, it could have helped as well for Job to feel heard in his silence as well, and in their silence. So I think the moment we feel compelled to say something, perhaps the more we need to hesitate.
Okay.
I must be quick to say silence is not always golden, even in the question of being there with those that are grieving. If we could take a leaf from the African approach to it, I don't know if it applies in all cultures.
Okay.
But in my culture, you just get there. The so-called chief mourner will be seated on a mattress. You get in there, you sit down, you look down. And maybe like Job's friends, you kind of delay to talk.
Yeah.
And when you finally talk, you ask a question. What happened? He looked so well. Just the other day, I was talking. What happened to him? Even when you know the story. In my culture, it's allowed. You ask. You don't want to come across as one who knows. And then that sitting on the mattress or in the space where the mourners, the family sits in to receive visitors, then they retell the story. This is what happened. And you have just finished telling the story. Then they want to pray. And then other people arrive. You retell the story.
Okay.
We know that as you sit there as one, when you ask what happened, you're saying, I am affected by this. I want to know. I am shocked. I am struggling. This is not making sense to me. Tell me what happened. And the more that you tell the story, we know when the mourner or those that are struggling with the grief and loss, as they tell the story, as they are heard, they are not being told, sit down, we'll tell you what verse to focus on. We are saying, we want to know. And then as they tell, we know that that has a cathartic effect on those who tell the stories. Somewhere they are going to choke with tears and pain, and you don't rush them. You just sit there. Let them share. You don't question their version of what happened. You're there to hear them out. Now, the mistake of Job's friends is that when they finally spoke, they started blaming, expressing suspicion. And they messed everything up.
Yeah, what does Proverbs say, Doc? Better to be quiet and be thought wise, right? Than to open your mouth and remove all
and confirm,
doubt.
We remove all doubt.
Yeah, it was a tough one.
So, if they had kept a little quiet even much longer, if they had spoken to the wife, when I say speak, ask her as well, engage her and letting them, both husband and wife, who are chief mourners, so to speak, if there's such a thing, and let them speak their pain as well. And we can ask, sometimes we can ask some of the questions. What does your faith journey mean to you when it feels like God is not coming through for you? And create those safe spaces where people can be able to say they are upset with God. Or most of us will not say we are upset with him. We will say we don't understand him. And we as the listeners, I think we want to be careful to not claim to understand God. Because you see, Job's friends, basically what they were saying, hey, bro, we can talk, man. How have you messed with God? Why is he doing this to you?
It can't just happen.
And that time Job had trusted on an all-merciful God. He was sure, very interesting, he was sure about his own righteousness before God, but he always interceded for his children, made sacrifices in case they have sinned, that God can have mercy on them. He did sacrifices for them. That was his attitude. And that can be confusing, by the way. And when he has done all that intercessory prayers, made sin offerings, just in case they have sinned, and from where he was standing, God wipes them out. That's how Job understood it. It must have been confusing for Job. But I take it that if the friends had asked, how are you dealing with this? This is what we know about you and your parenting style, creating altars for your children. So how are you dealing with this? I think that would have helped. Better than they did. Like we said the other day, let's not be quick to judge the wife as well. What mother must go through stuff like that and we still expect them to remain in their right mind? She was just a broken person. Just like the husband was. And I wish there were stories of how women came through to spend time with her. As mothers, you know, Even if they are not saying, I've been through this, I know it's tough. No, you don't want to be saying that.
Yeah.
But yeah. You can say, I don't understand.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah. How are you dealing with this? It goes a long way. I had a quick story about how when I lost my father,
okay,
God's wonderful people came through. And this is what the saints kept saying to me and my big brother, who's a minister as well.
Okay.
Some of my brothers are often involved in church leadership. They were like, oh, Mfundisi wam, yazi, I'm so sorry what has happened to you. But, you know, I remember when I lost my what? You drove all the way. I remember your sermon. You comforted us with this. So I have come here to remind you of your own words, Mfundisi, in my moment of loss. I'm reading this verse back to you. May it make sense to you as it made sense to us when you preached. And
sounds nice, right?
I'm telling you, 24 years later, I was diagnosed with a complicated grief, delayed and complicated grief, because my own pain and inner suffering was being silenced. I was being silenced because I am a pastor.
Yeah.
I must not grieve as if I am an unbeliever. I must not forget how I have comforted others. I must now comfort myself.
You know, in Shona, there is a saying. It says, "Matakajika kare hanyaradzimwana." To say that, no, we ate yesterday, my child, when the baby is crying for food. You can't say to them, no, but remember we had food yesterday. Think about that food and it will make you full. That doesn't work. That doesn't work.
It doesn't.
Yeah, it sounds nice, but hey, those are just, yeah. And like you're saying, it causes you now to be guilty of being pained, of being feeling this grief, because how can I comfort others if I'm now not comforted myself?
When I'm falling apart. Myself. Now, part of what meant the most for me when in my moment of my own loss and grief was to see people who traveled 1,000 kilometers one way. And they came there, they just touched my shoulder and said nothing. That went all the way. I remember that this was some 26 years ago. But I can tell you that those are the ones who made it a lot more doable for me to deal with my loss.
You know, Doc, as you mentioned these things, one of the things that you mentioned that sounded so profound for me, and sometimes we think the more learned you are, the more able to deal with things that you are. And, you know, we must take a page from these psychologists and so forth. And you said, no, this is just a traditional African concept. You get there, you keep quiet for a while, and that's it. And also you then allow the person, you ask them questions. How did it go? What happened? Talk to us, even though you know the story. It reminded me of that saying, right? A problem shared is a problem halved. That you're actually giving them the opportunity to unburden it. And as the more they say it, the more kind of relief than this weight is lifted from their shoulders. I don't know. I think the trick, what I'm hearing here is, number one, know when to keep quiet, but also know when to say, but more importantly, know what to say. And sometimes when you're in doubt, keep quiet and just say, you know what? Terribly sorry, our condolences. Because sometimes we are afraid of that awkward silence. We don't know, now I'm here to comfort, but now I'm also quiet. Who's supposed to speak here? And we want to fill that void with words, and we end up just stepping on the wrong things. Perhaps as we draw to the close, Doc, some may even neglect their own healing process, and perhaps it might be experiential, like you just testified now, how you it wasn't by choice that you neglected this grief process, but circumstances kind of forced you into that area. We maybe want to find out how one can then be mindful of that when you have people relying on you while you yourself are going through a tough time. How do you, I mean, stay strong, especially if you're a parent, right, and you still have kids. Think, be strong for the children, you know, and you're like, but I'm the one who also lost here, you know. How do you manage that? How do you manage that?
When I'm at work, when I move into that space of people grieving, I usually am on a lookout for voices of others that are saying, be strong, you can't fall apart, the kids are looking up to you. I've seen it being told to older sons and saying, hey, you can't fall apart, your mom is counting on you to survive and stuff like this. So a part of what I have done, and I'm not saying this is the best approach, as soon as possible, as people are kind of settling into the funeral preparations, I look for a private moment where I speak with the family.
All right.
And I make sure I don't stand up. And I will not go there having prepared a text to read. Should I read, it will be because I feel the conviction of the spirit to read somewhere. But it will start with what happened. But sometimes I'll start asking that question to somebody who might be the youngest in the family. Give and create spaces for voices to be heard, even from those who traditionally not be expected to speak. Then we will move as to, it turns out to observers, it may look almost like an intimate memorial service. So it would include, how are you coping? What is the most difficult thing for you about this loss? How would you want your fellow mourners as family members? Because none of you has lost in a way similar to the other. We may all be children, but we had our direct relationship with the person who has demised. So people should, we encourage them to share in that space their struggles, but also their memories of the happier moments and how they experienced this person. They are not speaking where there are 500 people listening. So this is not a speech is to impress. This is just assisting the family go through. So one of the things that we would check then, make sure gets covered, is the story of you got to be strong for so-and-so's sake. If it's the man who has demised, the mother of the children lost a husband, unlike them who have lost a father. And then the girl children have lost their first love from a male, so to speak. And all of those dynamics. So we need, it's never the same. So as long as people are not as, we are 9 children at home. on an average family, you can make sure that during that kind of a thing, you have made sure everybody's heard their memories, their struggles, happy moments. They can also speak about how upset they were. They are, maybe if they feel that the deceased is to blame in some way. And these are some processes of grief that we hear of the called state. Blame, self-blame. Sometimes we blame the deceased. Even when they died of an incurable disease, we'll still, but mama, how can she go at this time when I need her the most? So they are not angry because they caused their death, but we still ask the person, how could they go? And we don't have to pontificate for the deceased. And we maybe, just listen.
I want you to perhaps maybe, Doc, our time is out, but maybe in a minute, just talk to us, especially from a Christian perspective. Some of our listeners may be Christians who feel like, no, 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 you can only call the pastor, trust in God, pray, quote 1 Thessalonians 4, don't cry like you don't have hope, but the grief is eating. When can we actually say, perhaps I must pick up the phone, call professional help, get a practitioner to assist me with this dealing with grief?
Again, from personal experience, what I did when now Mama went, after we pleaded with her and she said she wants to go, no, you've got to hang around. She says, I want to go. It's your problem if you're not ready for my departure. I'm ready to meet the Lord when he comes. So after that, when we were done with the burials and so on, we then, as sons, we moved to see a psychologist. As a group, and we went through group grief therapy. And then there were follow-up individual sessions. There's never a time when you can over-consult.
I like that.
You can do with the support of the professional. It was very interesting because there I am. It's me, Uncle T, and others. Uncle T and I are therapists, and we assist people professionally to deal with grief and loss. But there we were, needing to subject ourselves to a fellow professional. And incidentally, this was a benefit thing for one of our brothers, your EAP programs, employee wellness programs, and so on. So we took full advantage of that. And as individuals, at some stage, if we felt the need, we would continue consulting. And but because we also have an idea of what needs to happen, from time to time, we have family gatherings, and we just go through the stuff. Not as professionals, but we do, because the skills are there. We do guide the conversations with our siblings and so on, and we have found it extremely helpful.
Well, amen, amen. I mean, someone can be thinking out there, pastors in therapy, but you're saying, no, no, actually, even us, we realize as a doctor, you can't be the one who always are saying, no, I know what to prescribe here. And they are told sometimes the case is too close. Thank you so much, Doc. I know we did go a bit overboard, but I thought it was necessary, especially as our closing remarks on this subject. We truly, truly appreciate your time. And God bless you, and may he continue to offer you healing. I mean, everybody is going through some loss, be it now or that's something past, it will still hit you. And may God continue to provide that comfort that he promised in his word. Thank you once again.
The Lord is faithful. I pray for the same for your listeners and all of us. May God's comfort keep us going.
Amen. Amen. Amen and amen. Yes.
Oh. Adventist World Radio, SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.